Hi, and welcome to episode 11 on Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and today we're talking about, do women perform physical activity better on their menstrual cycle? Pretty good question. And our guest is Dr. Liz Joy. You're going to be hearing more about her in just a second. And hey, this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We so welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
On this episode, we're excited to have Dr. Liz Joy on with us to talk about all things menstrual cycles and physical performance. Dr. Joy is the medical director for community health and clinical nutrition at Intermountain Healthcare in Salt Lake City. She's adjunct professor at the University of Utah in the Department of Family and Preventive Medicine. Oh boy, she's currently president of the Female Athlete Triad Coalition and is the president of the American College of Sports Medicine. Yay, go ACSM. Sorry, small bias, I'm a fellow. Having formerly served on the Board of Trustees and as vice president. And I'm just saying, she is absolutely the dial-in 411 on all things women and sports. So that's why we're so happy to have her on. Now, we're talking about something very interesting. Dr. Joy, Liz, welcome to Her podcast.
Well, thanks, Pam. It is great to be on the show and really looking forward to the conversation today.
Okay, well, the conversation was all started during the Olympics. And that was during the Summer Olympics 2016 when Chinese swimmer Fu Yuanhui, did I just butcher that one badly enough? Anyway, casually told reporters at the Olympics that she was suffering from period pain, her menstrual pain, during a swimming relay. And oh boy, her comments raised eyebrows and lit up Twitter like you've never seen. And she was really widely praised for this. And, you know, there were a couple of little naysayers out there for her rare public acknowledgement of a topic that nobody talks about except in the women's locker room. Does a woman's menstrual cycle affect her performance as an athlete? Well, Liz, you know as well as I do that there's a lot of interesting, somewhat anecdotal, but some fairly decent studies out there that kind of point to the fact that there are some potential vulnerabilities and susceptibilities to injury during a woman's menstrual cycle. So I'm just going to throw that over to you. With all of your experience, what have you seen and what do you think about this phenomenon?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'm going to hedge here and I'm going to say there are both positives and negatives, you know, around menstrual cycle and sport performance and risk of injury. So as you mentioned, there are some reports, some papers and research, you know, that suggests that, you know, women may be at greater risk for injury, for example, tearing their anterior cruciate ligament in their knee, you know, depending on the phase of their menstrual cycle. There is a, you know, a significant body of literature showing that, you know, women who lose their menstrual cycles, you know, as part of the female athlete triad, which we'll, I'm sure, talk about a little bit later, that they are at much greater risk for bone injury and also for tendon injury as a result of kind of estrogen deficiency when they lose their period. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, I mean, even patients I've cared for in my own clinical practice, you know, who have, you know, heavy bleeding during their menstrual cycle, or they get a lot of cramping, you know, something we refer to as dysmenorrhea or heavy bleeding, menorrhagia, you know, that may occur. And boy, that certainly can have a negative impact on sport performance. You know, and there are other women who kind of sail through their period and have nary a symptom. So, it's very individual, but there are, you know, some research to indicate that, you know, depending on where you are in your menstrual cycle, you know, you may have a higher risk of injury, and the absence of menstruation is almost never a good thing.
Uh-huh. And that's so terribly, terribly important. Let's just sort of go to this place. Now I'm gonna do a little share here. I swear it's not TMI. So here it comes. Okay. I outside of when I ran Boston, by that time I was postmenopausal, so it was sort of a moot point, right? But prior to that, I swear every time I ran a marathon, I was on my cycle. I mean, I could almost guess it. I looked at the schedule and I thought, oh no, come on, give me a break here. But there it was. And you want to know something? I was fine. I was perfectly fine. I had no problem. And it made me wonder, and that's why I started looking in the literature, you know, a long time ago. What is the relationship? Am I actually better on the cycle? Do I feel better when I'm actually, you know, when I actually have my period? Did I feel more relaxed? What is going on here? So for the women out there who are listening, right, you probably have, just like you said, that varied experience. It could be from A to Z. On average, do you think most women have a significant problem with having their menstrual cycle and also physical performance?
No, I think, you know, the vast majority of women, you know, they're having a cycle every 28 to 32 days, you know, and if they're athletes, you know, they're either training or they're competing, you know, and we just don't know where they are in that menstrual cycle. You know, menstruation is normal physiology, you know, for women of reproductive age. So, you know, the vast majority, we have no idea. And, and as you said, you know, like yourself, you know, you're performing while you're having your menstrual bleeding, you feel better. You know, there's definitely going to be others who, during that period of menstrual bleeding, they feel worse. So, you know, there's no literature that says one way or the other that, you know, during that menstrual bleeding phase of the menstrual cycle, you know, the performance is either going to be better or worse.
Oh, and interestingly, I think I've also cautioned some of my own patients. I know you certainly have. And when they say, oh, gosh, I'm on my period, so I guess I won't work out today. Wrong answer. Why not? What's to stop you? So what? And maybe you modify it somewhat, or maybe you don't do anything. Maybe you just, do your own thing. I personally have found it, it really made me feel fantastic most of the time. I don't know, maybe I'm a freak, but, I didn't really have that much of a problem with it on the overall. What do you tell your own patients?
Well, you know, when we're talking about people who have really painful periods, they have a lot of, you know, menstrual cramping, you know, one of the treatments for that, you know, aside from pharmacology, you know, from giving a medication, is we tell people to be active, you know, to actually exercise. If at a very minimum, you know, do a brisk walk. So Definitely we shouldn't discourage people from activity, you know, during that period of menstrual bleeding. No reason to change or to discontinue activity, you know, unless, of course, you know, you are one of the unfortunate people that has really heavy bleeding or has really severe cramps, you know, that really impair your ability to function. And if that's the case, then I really encourage people to seek medical care, you know, to seek out the care of a family physician or an internist or obstetrician gynecologist who can kind of evaluate that and say, wow, is there something that we can, is there some reason for heavy bleeding, or is there a reason for heavy cramping? And is there something that we can do about it to improve your quality of life and your ability to function at the level you want to function at?
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly second that. So many women out there just sort of stay home and are miserable, and they're not seeking that kind of help. They're not asking those kinds of questions. And what you're really saying is there's plenty of help out there. We've got all kinds of ways to be able to help remedy that, but most importantly, get down to the bottom line of what's going on with you. Do you have endometriosis? What do you have? What's happening to you? It, depending upon how old you are, it could be fibroids, it could be a number of things. So it's really important to get to the bottom line and not just sit there and be miserable. So let's flip over for a second to something that's really a real passion of yours, and that's the female triad. I know that a lot of women out there, you know, when we talk about issues that have to do with menstrual cycles and physical performance, you don't have to be an Olympian. You could just be a, you know, just a regular moderate exerciser to be interested in all this. But there are those people who really take it to a much, 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 much higher level at multiple levels, and it affects how they eat, their body composition, and then eventually their menstrual cycle. So can you take us through the A to Z on the female triad?
Sure, absolutely. The female athlete triad defines three distinct but interrelated conditions, and I'll talk about each one of them. The first is low energy availability. The second is menstrual dysfunction, and the third is problems with low bone mineral density. So low energy availability occurs when you perturb, you know, one, two, or three of your energy buckets. So one energy bucket is your stored energy, you know, what you were talking about, kind of your body composition, you know, how much, what's your body mass index? You know, we don't really look at body fat per se, but, you know, how much stored energy do you have in your body? That's one energy bucket. The second energy bucket is your energy intake. How much do you eat? Are you meeting your energy needs, your caloric needs, you know, based on your daily energy expenditure, you know, what you need to do just kind of living and breathing and sitting and standing, you know, in addition to your exercise energy needs. And then there's that third energy bucket, which is energy expenditure. You know, and it's not just the energy that you expend with exercise, you know, the 30, 60, 90 minutes you spend doing whatever kind of structured exercise you do, but exercise that you extend with active transportation. For college students, for example, walking around campus, I mean, gosh, you know, they may walk 6 miles a day just walking from their dorm to classes. That's about 600 calories of energy expenditure. So low Absolutely. Energy availability can occur, right, when you have insufficient dietary energy intake, you have low stored energy, and you have high energy expenditure. That's the first part of the female athlete triad. The second part is...
Here we go.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, well,
no,
second
I was just going to say, everyone out there, energy. Just write that down.
Yeah.
So it's the energy stores. It's all about energy. That's number one. So number two is what?
Number two is menstrual dysfunction. And that mm-hmm. is where your periods start to space out. Maybe you had your periods every 28 days. And then they become every 60 days, and then every 90 days. And then all of a sudden, you've gone 6 or 12 months with no periods at all. And that can happen. And the reason for it is it's interesting. It's a protective mechanism. You know, the brain's job is to protect the self. And if the brain perceives that there is not enough energy around to protect the self, it turns off your reproductive capacity, because, you know, the brain kind of sees a fetus as a parasite. I mean, it's just another energy suck. And so turning off the menstrual cycle is a protective mechanism to prevent further energy loss.
Interesting.
And that's what
now,
results
let me,
in
let me ask
the
you
loss
a quick
period.
Question. What
yeah.
what is, you know, I've seen literature that says that it is that a reduction in lean body mass, that's muscle, is also associated with dysmenorrhea and also amenorrhea. Basically, it's not just fat fuel stores, but it's also lean body mass. So that when you're dropping enough weight on the overall, that's why I went to body composition, that it's both, or is one supervening over the other? I think this has been a question that's been kicking around out there.
Yeah, no, it's both. I mean, you know, if you're not meeting your, you know, your energy needs relative to your energy expenditure, you're going to burn fat, and eventually you're going to get around to burning muscle. And so, you know, it's really, that's why we have that energy bucket that's about stored energy. And we store energy in our body, you know, as fat and as muscle, you know. And so, yes, absolutely, that lean body mass loss occurs in the setting of low energy intake relative to energy expenditure.
Interesting. All right. So now what's number three?
Well, let me just finish up with menstrual dysfunction. So,
you lose your periods, right?
You lose your periods. And so your ovaries aren't making estrogen and progesterone. But most females, the vast majority of females, are highly estrogen dependent for bone health. And so, you know, kind of an unintended consequence of your brain turning off your ability, you know, to reproduce in the setting of low energy availability is that it turns off that ovarian production of estrogen. And that loss of estrogen, you know, has a negative impact on bone health. And depending on when that occurs, you know, can have, you know, a greater or lesser impact on bone mineral density, which gets us to that kind of third component of the female athlete triad, which is low bone mineral density. And, you know, if you sit in a chair all day long, you know, the fact that you have low bone mineral density, you know, may not result in, you know, significant health consequences unless, of course, you trip and fall and break your hip, which, you know, certainly happens. But with athletes, and particularly weight-bearing athletes like runners and triathletes and basketball and volleyball players, you know, if you're pounding and you're weight-bearing, you know, and impact loading your bones and you have low bone mineral density, you're at higher risk for stress fractures. And
you see, you know, these all the time.
Yep. And, you know, stress fractures can be kind of a nuisance injury, you know, and they take people out of, you know, training, you know, for 2 to 6 weeks, you know, depending on where they are. But, you know, for other people, it's a season-ending injury. And I've even seen it, you know, sadly be a career-ending injury for some and a life-altering injury for others. So they're not benign. I mean, stress fractures are absolutely not benign. So that's the female athlete triad, you know, low energy availability, menstrual dysfunction, low bone mineral density. You know, you combine that with kind of athletics, high risk of stress fractures.
All right. So now this young woman or this woman there is sitting in front of you, right? What do you do? How do you begin to intervene? Because now, you know, for whatever reason, she ended up in front of you. It could have been maybe a stress fracture. Maybe it was the fact that she's feeling just so poorly and she thinks it's a mystery. Whatever. So now you sit down with her. How easy is it to turn this around? What are the steps that are taken? Because clearly psychology plays a big role here.
Yeah, it does. You know, I'm incredibly fortunate that I work with an outstanding multidisciplinary team to care for, you know, females who are affected by the triad. I have, you know, a team of dietitians, you know, pediatric dietitians, you know, sport dietitians, work with outstanding mental health professionals who, you know, have experience working with athletes and active people. And so our team, you know, cares for these people. And you know, my role as a physician is really to evaluate them medically and determine, you know, what kind of health risks they're experiencing, you know, and to kind of guide referrals, you know, sometimes to prescribe medications. The dietitian, of course, you know, is not only just helping them with what to eat, but really helping, you know, particularly for those who have disordered eating or eating disorder, you know, it's helping them to kind of establish, you know, a healthy relationship with food and to not be afraid of food. And the therapist, you know, is really trying to understand, you know, how did they get there? How did they end up with these eating problems that are now affecting, you know, other aspects of their health? How are they going to get out of this? How are they going to shift into different ways of coping with stress? And then in the future, how do you not go back to this, you know, so that the next time, you know, the proverbial poop hits the fan, you know, you don't go back to an eating disorder and use that a way of coping with stress. So that's what we do. And for some people, you know, they get better in a few months. For other people, it's a few years. And for some, you know, it's something they kind of struggle with for a lifetime. So, you know, it's pretty variable, but I do think, and the literature would not just suggest, but really state that multidisciplinary approach to caring for people and really giving them that healthcare hug is the way to help them get better.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that a more holistic and integrative approach here is the only way to go. I've worked with so many, young women who are really obsessed with winning and obsessed with getting the medal and obsessed with achievement, that they literally forget that they have a body that is being throttled with over-exercising, over-training, and they also become very body-obsessed. And I'm sure that you deal with this as well. This whole issue of the body image really hits home. If I could just throttle my body some more, I could become that perfect body for my specific sport, as it were. And just getting through all of that, because they, you know, many of these young women that I've talked to don't even care that they don't have a period. They don't, you know, they don't really want to listen to the bone density thing, because what's not happening in their mind is a connection with all of this. All they want to do is achieve and succeed and push themselves, and they figure they're young and they could just sort of get over what's going to happen to them, the price they pay right now, if they could just win now. And so I find this to be a very significant psychological stumbling block in a lot of, or certainly a challenge in handling a lot of these. Have you run into that as well?
No, absolutely. You know, all of the above. You know, but I'll share an anecdote, you know, of a recent athlete that I saw who's a very high level, elite competitor who, you know, was seeing me for some menstrual dysfunction and just having some very irregular periods. And as I walked into the exam room, she just looked at me and, you know, she knew what kind of doctor I was, and I'm a triad doctor. And she just said, "I do not have an eating disorder." I'm like, "Okay, great, fantastic." And she went on to say that, you know, at her performance level, her level of competition, which is at the absolute highest level, she said, "I couldn't possibly compete at this level with an eating disorder." She said, "I need my energy. I need to fuel my body to perform. And if I didn't, you know, eat smart and eat enough to support, you know, my health and to my performance," she said, "I would not be going to the Olympics in Rio." And, you know, that really struck me, you know, and is an anecdote that I have since shared many times with patients, you know, since meeting with this woman, you know, many months ago. And so I think we have to kind of, you know, get people to that belief system and help them, you know, through the multidisciplinary team to say, you know, it has less to do with your body composition and has more to do with, you know, the your body's ability to function at a particular level. You know, and that's really done, you know, particularly at elite sport, by optimizing your training and eating smart and eating enough to fuel yourself to win.
You know, it's interesting. Not so long ago, I met Dara Torres, you know, the Olympic swimmer, who's now in her 40s. And she had just written her autobiography about her own eating disorder. I mean, look at this body of hers, dear God. I mean, it's just magnificent for swimming. It's like jaw-dropping. And she's obviously achieved. Yet, you know, even her, at her level, and her international, you know, renown, struggled mightily with this, as well as so many others. I'm glad to see that people like Dara and others are actually coming out and really talking about this, because it really is an issue. It's funny, Ali Raisman, who was on our, you know, obviously our gold medal winning gymnastics team with Simone Biles, at one point during an interview, said something about the fact that, gee, I'm really happy that I don't have an eating disorder or a problem. I've just been very fortunate that way. And it was an interesting, she certainly wasn't in denial. She looks very appropriate for her height and her extraordinary ability. And she was talking frankly about it, because so many women are now opening up the discussion, opening the door, and saying, you know something, There you have it. We need to be able to talk about disordered eating. See, I oftentimes like to just call it disordered or chaotic eating. Because sometimes the patterns don't fit perfect definitions of what, you know, we as physicians know they should. They just sort of one moment they're binging, then they're not binging, and then they're okay, then they're not okay, and it just goes on and on and on like that. So I think it's important to just open up the discussion so that young women, and, well, actually any woman at any age, can feel very free to talk about this, because I think it's a big issue, don't you?
Yeah, no, I agree. Gosh, I don't even know where to start with that. I mean, you know, I think if we talk about, you know, fueling your body, you know, for health and performance, you know, rather than, you know, really depriving your body, you know, of calories, you know, that's really aimed at altering your body composition. I mean, those are very different things. You know, restricting dietary intake to alter body composition is not fueling your body for health and performance. You know, they're essentially diametrically opposed. And, you know, I think of a gymnast like Simone Biles or Allie Raisman. You know, they end up almost selecting themselves, or maybe their body selects them, you know, for gymnastics. I mean, neither one of those,
yes,
you know, outstanding athletes, we're going to play volleyball or basketball or water polo,
that's,
right?
Boy, that's
like
true.
That's,
absolutely.
You know, that's not their body. And, you know, I heard this story once from a ballet dancer, a professional ballet dancer who was, you know, thin and long and lean and, you know, a very beautiful woman and, you know, having regular periods, you know, and was seeing me for something completely unrelated. Yeah, but we just started talking a little bit about that because she knew what I did in my clinical practice. And, you know, she knew a handful of people across in her professional career who had struggled with eating disorders. But she said, basically, you know, ballet dancers get to this level because they phenotypically have the right bodies to train and perform at that level. You know, and as somebody who has to kind of, you know, restrict their dietary intake and do additional training in order to fit that kind of phenotypic appearance, you know, of a professional ballet dancer, they're not going to make it. And especially if they do it through an eating disorder, it's too demanding.
You know, it's interesting, Liz. I remember a study done a while ago that showed that if you look at gold medal winners in whatever sport, it didn't matter, that those people were the most likely to have done that sport and got a gold because they were born that way. And that if you start, you know, going into the silver medalists, the, you know, the bronze, and then the people who didn't make it but maybe are in the top 20, you know, which is certainly saying something at the Olympic level, that as you got lower and lower in the numbers, you know, so you have people who will never medal, but they're really superb at what they do. They just, you know, they're not the perfect, that they're the ones who have the highest levels of disordered eating, because what they're doing is trying to achieve the body of the gold medal winner, but they weren't born with that body. And so what's fascinating is you can do some navigating around with it, but it's a tough go. And I think that, you know, to your point, Misty Copeland, the magnificent, you know, ballerina with American Ballet Theater, is that way because look at her legs, dear God. I mean, you couldn't pray for legs like that. I mean, her gastroc, I mean, her, oh my gosh, I just can't even begin to touch how magnificently, as it were, perfect her body is. Sinewy, muscular, magnificent. But you can't pray for that. You know,
no.
And so I think that a lot of people just have to humbly look at and see what they got and work with it. And sometimes, you know, you could do amazing things. Remember the skater who's so wonderful, Hamilton, Scotty Hamilton?
Scotty Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Scott Hamilton.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And yes, and he won the gold and everything. But you know what he did, which was interesting, and this is a little nuance on this. It's called work with what you got, honey. He actually was short, you know, in stature because he had some issues medically when he was growing up. So he was shorter in stature. And instead of not being one of the super tall, muscular guys, he was shorter. But you know what he did? He was the first one to win the gold by pulling off a backflip at the Olympics. Why? Because he could. He's closer to the ground. And he absolutely stunned people. So that was the most beautiful example of adapting and adjusting when God, you know, hands you a kind of a rough, you know, little deck of cards there. And that's okay. You just sort of make it work. So this is just fabulous. You know, Liz, this has been a wonderful, wonderful podcast because you've really taken your expertise and shed such great light on all things women, menstrual cycles, physical performance, and the female athlete triad. Dr. Liz Joy, thank you for being on Her Radio. Ah, this has just been such a great podcast. Hey, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take time to rate it. While you're over there, can you leave us a review as well? Just remember, my mother reads these things. Listen, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I've just had so much fun on this podcast. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Listen in. They're all good. Thanks for listening, and stay well.